several weeks ago.
Conference record has joined the conference.
And again, welcome everyone. This is Joe Gregory, Orbograph, from covering the live results of our Orbograph Users Conference, the Check and Healthcare Payments Automation Jazz Fest, back in New Orleans on April 10th and 12th. We've got a really fun agenda for you today, and essentially this is going to be an hour of power, essentially trying to cover all the topics that we addressed in a day-and-a-half session, but doing it in a way where we keep things at a very high level and provide you information. After the webinar, we'll provide you resources where you can dive into additional details. So the goal here today is to basically whet your appetite with the content that we presented, and also if you have any questions along the way to ask us during the webinar or afterwards. The agenda itself for what we're covering today during the webinar is basically to touch from a very high level of the financial industry from some of our presenters, as well as the healthcare payment industry, and then start to dive a little bit deeper into how the Orbograph solutions are addressing these needs in the payment industry of the future. Lastly, we'll address some of the presentations which our business partners and alliance partners presented, and we'll cover those, give you some resources for ECHO rule number 8 and 9, and follow up with some final technical details about the product release announcements that we had at the users conference itself. So this 1 hour of power is dealing with our conference in New Orleans. As I said, New Orleans was a fantastic place to have our conference. And just to kind of kick off the session, we'll have some polling questions along the way. I wanted to ask everybody, have you ever been to New Orleans? So basically how you do this is with ever the button that you want to select, you just click on it with your mouse. The red is yes and you've loved it. The blue is yes, it was okay. The yellow is yes, you hated it. The green is no, you've never been there, but you want to go. And the purple is no, and you never really want to go either. So I'll give you a chance to interact a little bit here as we kick off with the conference. Like I said, we had a pretty good time while we were down there. And so I'm wrapping up this question, and what I'm going to do here is close the polls now. If I can click on this right one, close polls, and I'll display them to you. And as you can see, most of the people, 36%, loved it. Nobody hated it, which is nice. And quite a few people do want to go there. So we can definitely say we would recommend New Orleans for any conference. Our conference agenda was all about content this year. It was a jam-packed session with 33 different presentations, all in a day and a half. It was very interactive, and we had a chance to really explore not only technical issues and technical capabilities and new product announcements, but also we enjoyed the food, the entertainment, and we really got jazzed at the New Orleans Jazz Fest. Our standard, our business partners from the past several years, we had a strong showing again this year from those, but also what was kind of neat is that the attendees were very diversified this year. We had a whole new group of folks who are relatively new resellers or business alliance partners, and that made the conference a whole different flavor because many of these organizations were smaller organizations who were basically starting up in the industry or addressing niches. So it gave us a little bit of a different flair, and we were able to identify some specific niches that Orbograph product is addressing in a non-traditional way. But also we had many bankers in attendance, some great speakers, as you'll find out here in a moment, quite a few customers, and several healthcare professionals. I think we had about 15 of those interested in our healthcare direction. And one of the things that you'll get after this webinar is a link to the live video feed, quote unquote, that we had from Tommy Thompson. Basically, Tommy was our keynote speaker. He's the former governor of Wisconsin, as well as a Health and Human Services Secretary under George W. Bush, and he really provided a nice perspective as it related to the healthcare opportunities for all the providers as well as the financial institutions. The conference agenda this year was stored on the guidebook capabilities, and what we'll do also is we'll give you a link to this guidebook. We still have all the materials up, so it'll give you a chance to log in and take a look at the materials and download them from that standpoint. When we started off the conference, we had our normal introduction with the Tommy Thompson video and so forth, but we also kicked off with, at the high level of the financial industry, Mike Sherman, who presented from CCG Catalyst Consulting Group. And so basically what Mike did was he talked about a couple of different payment trends. You know, we've all seen this trend here. We know that the check volume is going down. On this particular study from the Fed, it would appear that the volumes of checks in 2013 are down to about $18 billion per year. That was at an annual rate of 7%. But when you also compare that to Solent's recent study, Solent had a little bit of a different number for check. You know, basically they were saying that it was still over $20 billion per year. So it could mean that from their perspective, maybe the volumes are declining a little bit slower on the check side, but there's still a lot of niches out there for us. As you can also see, the debit card growth was very significant, and the credit card growth had become more stable as predicted. So the other consideration here as we move forward is what are the demographics of the people moving forward? How does that impact the financial institutions and their product mixes? And how does it impact all of the vendors that were there as well? And so obviously we're a very check-centric organization. In Mike's presentation here, we showed that the percentage of population that were still in the range of ages that were predominant check writers was still a good percentage of the population. And so, hence, I think that indicates why, one of the reasons why checks have really not gone away. As Grandpa, would you tell us a little story about what life was before the smartphone? This was a lead-in to the mobile banking topic, and we talked about that quite a bit. Basically, we need to factor in this millennium generation in terms of how they're adopting mobile. And according to Mike, mobile was certainly a very strong component to any financial institution strategy moving forward. So into conclusion, it was know your customer demographic, know how they're evolving in your particular area. There's a lot of sources available to do demographic studies in your particular target market. You know, the mobile transaction marketplace is moving from a differentiator at a financial institution to actually more of a must-have. So we didn't think it was quite to that level of adoption yet, but it was moving in that direction. Electronic payments, those are climbing, and check usage. His message was basically hone in, reduce your unit costs through various optimization techniques, and also look to enhance the niche applications that are out there for your organization. So that essentially was Mike's a high-level review of the financial industry. We also brought in Vijay Balikrishnan. Vijay provided us a view of the capture industry and basically trying to illustrate who's capturing, where is the distributed capture moving towards, how many units are being promoted and pushed out to the field. And so that presentation will stand on its own on Thursday at 2 o'clock as well, and we'll have Vijay be our keynote speaker for that particular webinar. So if you haven't signed up for that, you should be getting another invitation here, and we'd love to have you join that one as well. So when we transitioned into the healthcare payments, Mark Brousseau of Brousseau and Associates started off by talking at a very high level how big this industry is. You know, you're talking about a $2.5 trillion industry, one-sixth of the U.S. economy at least, if not more, and that's predicted to grow significantly. But there are many quote-unquote opportunities. You know, there's a lot of waste built in the system of inefficiencies. Some say that that waste is as large as $800 billion per year. And it's a growing industry, too. You know, the number of claims and the number of services that are being provided are growing at about an 8% clip. Up until that point in time. And the other consideration, of course, is that some of the administration costs are very significant. So folks in that industry are looking to save money. They're looking for additional services that can help drive their profitability as they move forward. And much of that is actually in the paper world. You know, there's a lot of activity now trying to convert to an electronic only system. That's going to take a while. So basically what we have here is a growing industry. With the new ACA Act from the government, there's going to be over 30 million new folks coming into the system. So what it does is it makes it important for both insurance payers, as well as providers, healthcare providers, to come up with better ways to do things, even if they take paper and convert it into an electronic along the way to make it more efficient. That's better than not doing it at all. And we all know about Obamacare, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. It's actually got some really great stuff in there in trying to move the industry forward towards electronic payments. It has created standards for electronic funds transfer, electronic remittance devices, or ERAs, as they're known for. And, you know, the government believes that this is going to reduce the costs significantly. In fact, $4.5 billion over the next decade. And there are some positive indications that some of these standards that have been released are helping. You know, you can see that the adoption of paper versus electronic seems to be tilting its way and growing towards the electronic-only payments, but there's still a lot of work to do. Nobody expects it to be overnight. Nobody expects it to be done next year, but over the next 3 to 5 years, maybe longer, there's going to be an opportunity for financial institutions to step into this marketplace and offer some new services. Here's an example of one where there's a topic called reassociation. And what ends up happening sometimes is you have a remittance advice sent directly to a biller or to a financial provider, or I should say to a healthcare provider, whereas the ACH goes to their bank. And so they never really have a good way of reconciling that ACH transaction to the payments that they've received through the remittance advice. So that's another part where a financial institution could potentially come into play there. So what are folks saying about this evolution? You know, what's going to be the impact of this reform? Do they think that it will help drive electronic payments? You know, I think you can see that the market and this study back in 2010 was still not fully optimistic about it. You know, there's so many things going on for healthcare providers to deal with that you can just imagine. It's like when banks get hit with all kinds of compliance requirements, you know, there's so much of it there that it takes the focus off of the business. So I think that's the initial concern here. And also due to the fact that there's a lot of different obstacles. You'll get this as a handout, but, you know, there's lots of obstacles for the healthcare provider as well as for the insurance company, the payer. And those concerns, those obstacles basically slow the process of adoption of electronics. So what you have to do is very similar to the Check 21 environment, is figure out ways in terms of how you can bridge from an existing paper workflow into an automated workflow in some manner, and then take advantage of the efficiencies that can be derived from that. So the main message that Mark also had to say was that the role of banks can be very positive in this space. You know, 5.5% of large corporate cash management revenue comes from the healthcare provider space. They're looking for more products to help reconcile, to help automate, to eliminate manual processes. And there was an expectation that about 30% of these would like help in their automated processing. So when you look at different ways that you can do that, you know, there's an evolution of products that are available, all from standard checking accounts, cash management services, all the way to automated processing of everything for these healthcare providers. And, you know, that falls in the category of a medical lockbox, which is one where, say, a financial institution takes in the EOBs for these healthcare providers, and they do the keying for them. Or you can move to a digital lockbox, which is one where the healthcare provider's EOBs are processed by the bank, but it's all done automatically. And last but not least, a new topic that you'll hear a little bit more of today as well is a virtual lockbox, where you can still offer this quote-unquote lockbox functionality tied in with the cache management, but you don't have to reroute all of the paper to the physical lockbox itself and all the invoices. So that can be a nice way to increase adoption in this particular market. And the market is big. You know, you've got a lot of different targeted clients for healthcare providers. Mark pointed this out, everywhere from large hospitals to regional ones to small practices, dental industry, and medical billers. So there's a lot of opportunity out there. And for the bank, you know, there's a revenue play. There's charging for these types of transactions. There's driving deposits. There's creating stickier customer relationships because of the fact that once you get someone locked into this workflow, it's very difficult to change it. And then it gives you the foundation to move into other services as well, which are more advanced solutions, but they can be highly profitable for you. So that was Mark's message as it relates to the healthcare side. And so what that evolved into was then Barry Cohen talking about what Orbograph's strategy was and how it complements our existing recognition processing and leverages that technology in this workflow as well. So who is Orbograph? Most of you know who we are, but there were some very interesting numbers that we accumulated. We've got over 1,500 licensed end users now running our solutions, processing billions of images per year. And now with this healthcare payment direction, we've actually got over 500,000 claims a month that we're processing. So the beauty of it for our company is that we're going into a growing industry. Check recognition, the revenues are still strong. We're still building our business in that side and maintaining a good amount of profitability. But the healthcare payments is a really nice way to move into electronic transactions. You know, it supports the same target market, the same line of business, and it really expands the opportunity into a new customer base for those financial institutions. You know, this revenue cycle management is what it's really called, is really a financial discussion. You know, it's dealing with processing, efficiency, expanding product lines at the financial institution. So the tie-in is tremendous, we believe, for our organization. And when we look at our product overall in terms of what are the things we think we can add value to the process, it's streamlining the billing, payment, and remittance processing. It's allowing the healthcare organizations to lower the cost of reconciling their receivables. It's improving the speed at which the funds are collected and identifying and minimizing events that reduce reimbursements. And it offers financial institutions additional revenue opportunities in cash management. So it's essentially decreasing the cost and increasing the value and the velocity of the healthcare receivables. And so at this point in time, we're going to take a very short break, give you all a chance to do a little voting here. And the question to the folks on the line is, do you think banks can fulfill a need by healthcare providers, or to healthcare providers, I should probably say? So the red is yes, there is a major need from your perspective. The blue is yes, there is a need, but you believe it's a small niche. The yellow is possibly there's a need here, but it's too early to tell from your perspective. And last but not least, no, there does not seem to be a particular market need from what you've seen out there, and you don't think that financial institutions really need to enter into this marketplace. Okay, so I'm going to close the polls now and move into the display process. So looks like most of the folks on the line say that there is a major need for this particular direction. So that's reassuring from an Orbograph perspective, and certainly you'll be seeing a lot of marketing activities coming out of our organization in this particular area. So thank you for your feedback. Now let's move into a brief discussion that we had with Dan Welch of Bank of America. You know, Dan was providing his own personal opinions, not necessarily the Bank of America opinions, but he basically was saying, first of all, let's talk about the fraud topic. what are banks out there really dealing with? And the ABA study came with some numbers that were lower. At a recent conference, many bankers thought they were trending up. A recent discussion with ABA sources indicates that the losses are potentially trending similar or down a little bit. So what's really going on there? And Dan was sharing his perspective from a very large organization. He's essentially saying that the straight-through processing model, which banks are moving closer and closer to, you know, essentially taking the hands off of touching check payments and so forth, and speeding up the image exchange process has really expedited exception cases and moved returns faster, okay? And by doing that, the way that the laws are written, a paying bank can really return many items back to the Bank of First Deposit and protect themselves. So that means that they have essentially protected themselves in the flow. If the depositing organization has done their correct merchant agreements, et cetera, they can push some of those losses back to the merchant, okay? And so in many cases, funds to cover bad checks can be secured before the loss occurs. And so what ends up happening is potentially some of these receivers and merchants are the ones holding the bag when it comes to the fraud. So it's not necessarily that the check fraud is completely declining to a point of zero or anything like that. It's just that many of the banks have now built in these protections because the number of attempts have remained quite steady. And so Dan's basically encouraging folks to continue a positive direction in that, but you need interoperability, communication between the banks to really close that loop as best possible. Another topic which he talked about was endorsements, also spelled with an E, by the way, and cannot requiring the payee to endorse deposit items create problems. So sometimes a paying bank will return a check for lack of endorsements. And however, there's not a whole lot of case law as it relates to this. So this is one where if you're the Bank of First Deposit, though, and you don't want to get stuck with a duplicate coming back because it was redeposited somewhere else, what you really need to do is have some form of deposit on that initiating deposit from the customer. And that'll help protect you on the back end. Dan also had mentioned that duplicates were an issue. And there's all kinds of different duplicates going on. You know, folks are finally implementing at an enterprise basis, which I think is the key here, in that you need to really check against ACHs or dual deposited items, especially with remote deposit capture. So you need to have those controls in place as well. And he came up with another scam he wanted to share with us. This was one he said was got hit with a couple of times where, you know, what a fraudster will do is they'll make the courtesy amount a different value, significantly higher than the legal amount. And that has a lot of implications because you can potentially collect double on the double side. If you can gather the funds at the Bank of First Deposit and then you made a deposit at this bank here, the paying bank, to cover the funds, but you talk them into doing the 600, you know, you could potentially take your money back out and at the Bank of First Deposit, you lose the money there as well. So there's like two ends of that spectrum, and we've got some nice summaries here which kind of talks about that. Okay. Also, in this mobile deposit side, again, we had mentioned that with mobile, one of the biggest concerns is actually coming in, depositing it at an ATM or something like that, or doing a mobile deposit first and then at an ATM or then at a check casher. And here's another scenario here. So a lot of things to really hone in on with these and try and minimize the risk for your customers. And from Dan's perspective, he's saying, you know, you should really be applying or some type of verification process on all the items at all the different phases of the workflow that you can. Review these items when feasible, move it up in the workflow as much as possible, and verify with the other bank before applying credits and so forth. So another chance to get a little feedback from you from Dan here. Did Dan do well in representing challenges for your financial institution? From your perspective, even if you're a vendor, you can answer this one too. So, you know, some of the things that Dan said, click on the red if you think they all apply. Click on the blue if somewhat of them, some of them apply. And if you don't think any of them really apply to you, then give us a yellow click. Okay. So it looks like we're getting most of the votes in. So I'll close that and take a look there. So it looks like Dan was pretty much on. I'm going to have to tell him that, and watch out. He's going to be a little overconfident now. So, but thank you again for your feedback, and let's move on to what we call the rapid-fire presentations. The rapid-fire presentations were basically a group of Orbigraph people who were given 5 minutes to give an overview of what the new technologies were. And so the first technology that we talked about was next-generation recognition, or NGR technology, and that's basically comprised of three things. Virtually 100% read rate on retail deposits, mainly for teller image capture. Dynamic thresholding, which means that we're taking the best scores at various points of the curve, doing recognition. And then lastly, item validation. This is a capability for large deposits and remote deposit capture, basically trying to flag or highlight the items that could be misread or miskeyed within that workflow. And one of the ways that we're doing that is we're using very sophisticated methods to identify where along these read rate curves to apply the results. You know, what this represents is that at 100% read rate, at 0% misread is right up at this point here. And this curve is the curve that represents the read rate of personal checks and business checks. So I believe the red is a business check. So here we can get about a, say, a 92% read rate moving forward with the NGR technology at much less than a, at about a 0.2-0.3% misread. But on small deposits, you want to be out here because it's going to be easier to balance. So that's the key with this next generation recognition, is to be able to apply varying thresholds as we're getting results depending on the workflow. Pretty cool stuff. Then we had Chris Shepard come and present on our automation line of products. We've got automation for RDC, POS, check cashers, and then soon to be kiosk. And basically what we found is that there's a lot of niches out there of check cashers, merchants, retailers who have either developed their own platform or are looking to do so, and they need strong recognition capabilities. And they basically have started working with us to add those to their workflow. And so to them, it's a highly reliable technology. You know, all the reasons that you want to use recognition capabilities with some fraud prevention, they can build it in, and they can build it into a lot of different workflows. They can do it into online retailers. They can do it with the mobile type of applications, remote deposit capture, et cetera. So each one of these capabilities is available to these organizations at a very cost-effective manner. You know, all these features for these niche vendors and so forth also, for a little less than $900 a month, they can do this and apply it to their processing workflow. And, in fact, we even have a new customer. I believe he may be on the line here as well, Intermex. They're a check cashier with wire transfer. Great company, and what they've decided to do is apply some more automation to that check cashing workflow, and they're also looking for partners with their organization as well. So then we moved into a discussion on fraud. You know, Orbigraph's strategy is to provide best-in-class, honest check fraud prevention with a combination of image analysis and transaction analysis. That gives us the most efficient deliverable in the marketplace. Which is extremely flexible and gives you the ability to deploy in all kinds of different models, a traditional day two on the back end, or you can move it all the way up to the teller line into RDC. So Yaron had talked about some of the new capabilities that we had with that implementation, some of the new settings and controls that were built in, and more efficiency. So the message here is that we continue to invest in the Sereno product and continue to work with a number of resellers to deploy that in the field. Also applying it into payee name verification. This is a feature that actually has become quite popular because of alterations. You know, the number of alterations seems to be growing. And so this gives you the ability to offer a service to your business customers, which cuts down on the number of alterations that are experienced by them. Then we evolved into a little bit of a discussion that said, what are some of the other ways that financial institutions need to be protected, and how can Orbograph help? And so there were a number of different components, consideration. For example, posting errors and compliance issues with GLBA and confidential customer information, fraud losses and customer runoff. And in a traditional model with recognition, we were deploying it as a manual review process with basic image quality, image usability, et cetera. And now, you know, with some of these more advanced modules, we got amount verification, which can be applied to, you know, ATMs and to mobile and to in-clearings and all kinds of workflows that the bank is managing in today's environment. The endorsement detection that we talked about, even an account validation or verification process where you can look at some of these checks that are coming over the counter and make sure that they're written to the right payee as they come in. Also, from a distributed standpoint now, wouldn't it be great if at the teller line you couldn't automatically check for a check stock and a signature verification? Those are all the types of things that we're investing to try and improve the process and continue to add value to the check workflow. So here's another chance to give a little feedback. How do you like Orbograph's direction in the check processing recognition solution direction? Okay. 10, great, they all seem relevant. 7.5 is strong, most of them are relevant. You give us a 5, so-so, some of them are relevant. A 2.5 means I have no need, maybe others do. And a 0 basically says, stop it, get out of that business and go move into something else. So appreciate your feedback here. It looks like everybody has had a chance to vote, so I'm going to close these out. And we can see that between great and strong seems to be the majority of the responses, which is fantastic. That is very comforting as well to our line of business, so we'll continue to do that moving forward in the future. And, you know, some of these risk points that we talked about here, you know, on the fraud side, there's a lot of different ways to look at risk. You know, there's operational risk, there's reputational compliance. So the mix of products that we have make a good fit for these varying risk points. Then we jumped into Mike Manna's high-speed presentation. And here again, we talked into some more detail about converting the paper EOB into a transaction that is postable as a EDI type of transaction. And there's a lot of capabilities built into the Orbograph P2Post and E2Post systems. This is a process where we're taking paper and we're converting it so we can populate it into what's called a practice management system or patient accounting system. And then we're allowing the financial transactions to be viewed in what's called a payment portal. And in that payment portal, it's pretty nice because you can see various levels of cash positions, you know, what payers have been paying me or paying the healthcare provider. It does some nice analytics in that regard. Also, you can see where the denials come into play. So some of the payments that are coming from the insurance companies, they're basically denying the claims. And so this gives you a much nicer way to identify where these claims are coming from that are denied and how to address those. And also from an archival perspective, you know, many healthcare providers are back in time, back in the 80s and 90s. This gives a nice archive of transactions for them. So a lot of benefits, reducing costs by 30%+ by providing this type of solution is one of the key ingredients of the equation, because you need to have a value proposition between the provider and the financial institution. The automated posting and the balancing And also compliance with some of these new regulations is a big consideration. And last but not least, you know, with these denials that we have talked about here, you know, it was estimated that about 16% of the revenue is just lost because of denials and errors. So that's a huge consideration when you think about it. You know, it's a tough market to make money at, and this is a tool that can help those providers in that regard. And so the providers themselves, we talked about some of the markets before, but, you know, the billers, you as an organization, as a financial institution, you may have billers nearby that you can service with some better capabilities as well, in addition to maybe you're just small practices. So I think there's a capability out there for everybody. And as an example, here's how you can tie in remote deposit capture for your healthcare base. And in our traditional model, you know, you have a, for RDC, you have a scanner, and basically you're eliminating the deposit function at the bank. With this type of view, you can use a multifunctional scanner, which can do full page as well as checks, and it can all be branded by your organization, and then your organization essentially is providing this EOB conversion function as well as the check clearing function. And so then you provide them back a file to post in their practice management. So it's a pretty great value add if you're looking to add more for that particular marketplace. And this, again, it's called a virtual lockbox. You know, it's a much lighter approach than a heavier lockbox, especially because in a lockbox you need to have folks reroute their payments many times to your PO box. And that takes time to change and to add that into their forms and all that kind of stuff. So it's a nice platform idea. It gives the ability to do patient payments as well as insurance payments all on the same platform, and not only provide them a lot of benefit, but financial institutions can see a very significant benefit as well. You know, here's just a few, but you know, if you're looking to expand your treasury play, looking to lower the cost of data and payment acquisition, you know, for these organizations, gives you a larger geographic boundary to go expand into. And also, if you're playing up in the higher market, you can move down. So that's a little bit about the P2Post, E2Post solution. Now let's touch base on what some of our business partners had to say and some of our alliance partners. You know, it was a nice combination of several vendors came in and presented to us. And they were giving us a variety of different views in terms of how their solutions kind of fit in with the overall flow. And so the traditional flow is through the image platform, working with the within the bank. But all of these other players provide a value add too, and we'll get into that right now. In fact, we'll start with what Harlan Clark had to say. You know, what basically Harlan was saying is there's a new way to essentially standardize your forms. And when you look at these two forms here on this particular screen, you notice that the new form is with gray dropout boxes and the old form had color dropout. And if you go with a standardization with this particular type of approach, it actually provides a lot of benefits because here, essentially everything on the forms themselves will remain the same in the body of the form except for the color, okay? And so the color is what becomes your main differentiator, the color of the top portion of this item. So you can have a variety of forms all built with the same stock, and essentially what that does is it eliminates the obsolescence so you don't have to order as many of them up front as maybe traditionally. Also, you have a quicker turnaround time. So you're essentially building a template which is more easily reproduced. And it also has some other benefits here. You know, like I said, the enhanced sorting capabilities by the color. It follows a format which is a more open format, and achieve a higher copy read rate by moving 24-pound copy to second position of the form. So there's a lot of savings, streamlining when you implement this type of approach. And what we also wanted to mention is that there's another way to expand, or I shouldn't say to expand, but to consolidate your documents. And this is through our universal teller document. If you can imagine, this is a document which is multifunctional. And what we've designed here in this one is that you can use it for a number of different things. Somebody comes up from a customer perspective, wants to make a deposit. You know, they put a check right there, and then they fill in the, this particular deposit ticket, and that's what it performs as. Whereas if the next person comes in and they take it, maybe they just want a cash withdrawal. And the beauty of this approach is that each one of these boxes correlates with a specific TRAN code. So that TRAN code is mapped in our software and is then passed to the capture application. So it's a whole new way of approaching tickets. And so when you combine the Harlan approach with this approach, you can really save a lot of money in managing your internal tickets. So let's move on to what Digital Check had to say. Rick Uten came and presented. And basically, what he was saying is that the RDC workflow is continuing to draw volume out of the branches. And so because that volume is declining, the average transaction sizes and the dynamics of the branch are actually changing too. And what that impacts his organization is that you have on the one hand, you have two different arguments. On the one hand, the volumes are declining at the branch, and conceptually, the high volume ones are being taken by RDC. But in the RFPs, the banks want faster and faster scanners. So it's kind of like the question of how fast do you really need if your organization is implementing RDC and you're starting to pick up volume that way. And are the branch considerations the same now, or if you're doing teller capture, do you want the maybe a little bit of a lower speed that's at a lower cost, or do you want something really fast in the back counter? So, I think the evidence is that Digital Check is investing some more technology into a multi-pocket system, which does run faster. And so they're trying to meet the market's need as it relates to hardware in the branches. And so you can implement both a teller capture environment as well as a back counter type of approach and address those requirements. So sorting time, we talked about multi-pocket at the teller window. Rick didn't think that that was necessarily a value add. A couple reasons is that it adds decision time to the pocketing decisions. There are some other ways to accomplish that. Most of the people seem to agree with that approach. And lastly, we started to get into a concept of what's next here, the printing scenario. There is some interest by organizations to have better receipt printing, so that's an added value capability. Rick was saying that there's probably one more revolution or evolution through the features themselves. The good news is it won't look like this. You won't need to put this monstrosity in your back counter. But there are some new features which are coming out, especially, again, on the printing side. You can get nice receipt printing like this integrated with the check scanners and add a nice value add to your financial institution. So also present was Brian Clark from Digital Check, or I should say Silver Bullet. And basically what Brian's role in the industry is that he's a front-end solution provider which has a common API for all the check scanners. So you can see down below the various vendors here who work with the Ranger interface. And what the Ranger does is it gives a single interface to the software integrators, and that's a nice capability because you don't want to have to replicate interface code across all of these scanners. So they play a really nice role in the marketplace, and basically what they've done is they've helped expand the market by adding support for all the scanners, which means a faster time to market for these scanners, and increasing the profit because of the fact that you can reallocate your the software integrator programmers to other projects. And, of course, downstream to a bank, it means you can take advantage of scanner technology faster. So All My Papers came to the conference and presented. I don't know if you're familiar with All My Papers, but they have a really nice combination of toolkit capabilities. Essentially, what they're doing is they're extracting images from various formats. They're creating ICL files. They're running some micro recognition, doing some IRD capabilities. So a number of different toolkits that they provide, which are high value in a lot of organizations. And one of the topics that we talked about with them was the RDC customers. There is a niche out there, a need for folks to, especially now with mobile, but consolidate the RDC function. So it can be very difficult to implement RDC when you have a lot of branches. And with a platform or a toolkits available from All My Papers, it can help facilitate that. And it can minimize the costs and basically turn any capture device into a check scanner. And so, and to do things in an automated fashion. So whether you use a flatbed scanner or whether you use a mobile phone, they've got the ability to pick that image or pick the check out of that image. The image itself may not look very good initially, but they will convert it with some advanced image analysis technologies that they have and essentially give that an image ready for downstream processing. That's their role, is to do that upfront, tough, dirty work. And they're very good at it, too. And here's an example of how an organization, when considering an enterprise approach and with multiple offices, you know, each one of the offices would have to go make a deposit at their bank, and they had all these scanners out there. And with the All My Checks application, you can take this mix of images created from a wide range of scanners, and you can actually consolidate it into a single platform much easier. And then you can use more of a best-of-class image clearing process and decide more selectively which banks to use on the back end. So it's a nice enabling tool that organizations can utilize. Last but not least, we covered POS type of solutions. We talked about how CarLR can actually be deployed at a POS environment. This was by a new partner of ours called Tempus Technologies. Jason Switzer was the presenter. And Tempus is actually working very closely with Telecheck as well. So they have a lot of different new ways of being able to tie a verification process in with the POS environment or retailers or small retailers, et cetera, and then guarantee the funds on the back end. So Jason talked about a lot of niche marketplaces and about this particular learning care group who actually had a lot of different locations, and they implemented superior recognition software from Orbigraph with IQA, and that bundling process more from a retailer perspective not only reduced exceptions, but it saved them a ton of money in the way that they deposited funds. So some nice benefits from Tempus technology. So we wrapped up the first day then, which was really a full day in the French Quarter. We went out and we took pictures of all kinds of different missions with real fun pictures and so forth, and we had a couple of categories, quality, quantity, and worst picture. So I won't show you the worst picture. We'll save that one for the group only, but it was a lot of fun, and then we wrapped up on the river having dinner at Pat O'Brien's and hitting the bars afterwards. So that brought us into day two. Day two came very early, I'll have to say, for some folks, as we started at 8:30, and Stu Levine and myself kicked off day two with a quick synopsis of what drove our revenue increase in 2012. It was basically most of our core check products exceeded expectations, and that led us into a nice fun theme for the year of go big or go home when we kicked off the year. And so one of the big accomplishments was the Acura XV program. We had over 250 customers who upgraded during 2012, most of them getting over 90% recognition overall with a less than a 1% misread rate. Checks and business checks and personal checks were through the roof from a performance perspective. You know, you can see how our performance across multiple organizations increased significantly. And that's due testament to not only our recognition technology, but also the methodology of optimizing customers in the field. So with the new technology and with this managed recognition approach, you know, we were all very pleased. And this is a year also where we're going to continue to implement the upgrades to our existing customer base. And last but not least, we did get some helpful feedback. You know, what were some of the things that the folks were interested in? Was it better analyzing the read rates, or was it other services, and et cetera? And here's your chance to give us a little feedback as well. What else, based on what you've seen here today, do you think Orbigraph should continue working on? Do you think it's the red, which is check recognition improvements? Do you think the blue is the most important, of reporting by teller, branch, and account level? Yellow is fraud-related enhancements. The green is RDC-related. The purple is unique functionality and check recognition. And the orange is healthcare payments-related capabilities. So what do you think is the most important that Orbigraph should focus on here? And we have a nice little mix here. I'm going to close out the polls. Looks like we're getting a few final votes. Okay, we'll close those out and show you. Here we've got an interesting mix between check and healthcare. So I guess that's very healthy, and even fraud was represented well. So it looks like we're hitting on some of the key considerations that, as an organization, we wanted to. So thank you again for that feedback. Due to time, I'm not going to get into Rule 8 and 9. We will provide some information on it, though. This has to do with the processing of remotely created checks, and also forgeries and counterfeits. So some pretty interesting rules that, when we did a quick survey of all the folks who are at our Orbigraph conference, I think only like two or three people knew what Rule 8 and Rule 9 was. So they're very relevant to bank processing and decisions you want to make in fraud prevention. So I would encourage you to take a look at those and learn a little bit more. As we're winding down here on the webinar, just a few final technical points. We talked about our technology evolution, and Orbigraph as an organization now is honing in on this next generation recognition. We've got some other things in the hopper as well. We've got some third-party engine upgrades, particularly another OCR engine that we've identified. Some enhanced deposit money order performance continues to be on the list. And also moving towards a little different interface approach with a pure Java interface. So lots of things on the R&D to-do list. And here's a little better illustration of how we hone in on 100% oriented recognition. You know, these checks here at the low confidence level are the ones that were most challenging. And so basically what we're doing is we're focusing much more on these results. And by doing so, we're able to improve the confidence levels of many of these items. So work that traditionally had not been readable by us, we now apply what we call a read-all mode, and that enables us to increase the confidence on those items. And again, honing in on the business deposits, looking for the ones of the checks that have a very low misread. So if you're wondering what our release schedule is, you know, we're basically targeting a beta version at the end of June. We'll be working with a number of business partners to test out the NGR technology, which is listed here, and a couple other improvements dealing with Windows 8. So you'll hear about this coming to the marketplace probably more like a Q3 type of time frame. And if you have any questions on that, feel free to ask. So the last part here was a presentation by Stu Levine. Stu was talking about the compliance requirements for healthcare providers and also what that means for Orbigraph. Here's a kind of a funny little joke that says somehow your medical records got faxed to a complete stranger. He has no idea what's going on with you either. So there's a lot of meat behind the Orbigraph strategy dealing with regulations, compliance, customer confidentiality, dealing with HIPAA, and we continue to focus on GLBA. So we'll probably have another webinar on that particular topic. I think it's worth it to do it on its own, and look for that sometime in the June timeframe. And as we're almost wrapping up here, a couple of final topics. One is that the interface methodology, Boaz, Ron talked about that. We've got a really nice complement of capabilities now on the recognition side. So our traditional interfaces of C++ and now with C# and this OBI have really streamlined the integration process with the Orbigraph product line. Last but not least, from a topic perspective, this one, selling medical lockbox services, we'll have a separate webinar on that coming up as well. A lot of value that can be derived in terms of pushing healthcare services to these providers from a payment processing perspective. So look for that webinar coming up in a month or two as well. And hey, you missed the Orbi Awards, by the way. The Orbi Awards, we inducted 9 different folks for their achievements and personal involvement in helping progress the payments industry. Bob Wyrock, former CEO of WASA, we inducted him with the Founding Father Award, and quite a few new partners. And looks here like Chuck Hendrickson of Jack Henry dominated, but he was actually picking up one from Jerry Garrett as well as William Maloney. And also for Jack Henry, they had a fantastic year with us. So congratulations to all the Hall of Fame members and Orbi Award recipients, and hopefully some of you folks on the line here can be candidates next year. And speaking of next year, we closed out the conference on a real high note between Barry and Avicom. And so what about next year, guys? You know, you've seen what we've got here for some of the topics that we covered. You coming next year? 100% yes, 75% you'd like to. 50%, well, your schedule, we'll have to see what your schedule is. Usually you don't travel as the green, and maybe if it's in Hawaii, you might come. So let us know what your thoughts are in terms of joining us next year. And I'm going to close this one out as well. And you can see here that we've got a few folks who are committed to the cause. And I guess we'll have to see where our schedule turns out before we can really make some decisions, huh? So thank you very much. Just wanted to remind you that on Thursday at 2 o'clock, we have a webinar through the same login type of process. BJ Balakrishnan will talk about past, present, and future image capture technologies, and look to seeing you there. And last but not least, we'll provide you with some follow-up information via email. You'll get the conference presentation access. You'll get some fun pictures and also some of the keynote videos. Any questions before I log off? We don't have any questions built right in. And here was somebody who said, can I have a copy? Yes, yes, yes. So I think we're all set, guys. Thanks for joining us. We've had an hour of power. Take care and hope to see you on Thursday. Have a great day.